Hey guys, welcome to the Kevin and Fred Show. My name is Kevin Kaufman. I'm your host, and I just want to say thank you for taking some time out to listen with us this week. Do me a favor, if you don't mind, before we get to today's guest, head on over to ratethispodcast.com. That is ratethispodcast.com/NLA. That stands for Next Level Agents. ratethispodcast.com/NLA and leave us a review, or just go to any podcast player that you prefer and look us up, the Kevin and Fred Show, and please leave us a review. That is the best way to support our efforts here in the show. All right, let's get to today's episode. All right, guys, we're back on the Kevin and Fred Show, and sorry to do this to you again, but I am the guest again. So a little bit different format. You might have remembered last year I ran a copy of the episode, or the live interview, if you will, that I did with my good friend and couple-time guest on this show, Dustin Runyon, for his live weekly interview that he calls Fired Up Fridays. And so he did a different, a little bit different setup this time, where we really didn't talk a whole lot of business. We did some, but we went 2 hours. So we went deep. And the thing about Dustin that you should know is, like, he knows me well. He's one of my best friends for sure. And so he's able to ask questions that he's got inside information, I guess. And so it enabled him to ask some really good questions that caused me to think, and hopefully the question, not so much my answer, but his line of questioning hopefully will make you think as well. And so it's long, it's 2 hours. So we're going to divide this into two parts. So you are either listening to part one right now or part two. I don't know, because I'm probably not going to record a second intro for this, but I just want to let you know how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. If you want to find out more about Dustin and kind of what this Fired Up Fridays thing is, go over to firedupfridays.com. That's firedupfridays.com. And check out what Dustin's doing. He's not just my friend, but he's a mentor. The guy's helped me a lot, and probably more than I could even express. And I just love the guy, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
All right, guys. I am super excited for this Fired Up Friday. I have one of my best friends in the whole fucking world, Kevin Kaufman, on the call with us today. This dude has been... right before I got on the call, I was talking to my team. I'm like, he was one of the first people in real estate when this, like, that I don't know, gave me permission to be me and gave me permission to just be whoever I wanted to be, because the fucker wears a Dodgers hat and dunks wherever he goes and just is himself, and he is unapologetically himself. And so in an industry that sometimes is a suit and tie and a mask wearing industry, you were one of the realest motherfuckers out, and you brought me in, and you were kind to me, and you were good to me, and you were never made me feel like you were above me, even though you were. And so I love you, dude. Can we welcome Kevin Kaufman?
Love you, brother. Thanks for having me on. Back on, I should say, for Marathon. I don't know if you saw the chat or in the group, but like, Fred brought up a super valid point. Like, there's Fred, my business partner, with the details. The shit I'm never thinking of is, like, what if I have to pee again before 11 o'clock? Like, 2 hours. I'm like, I'm a little nervous to do this, but let's go.
I know. What is that? It's I don't know if we talked about this last time, but it's so funny. When you walk into Kevin and Fred's office, you definitely know who Kevin's office is and Fred's office is.
You don't even have to, like, literally don't ask. Just look at the two desks and you will know which one is mine and which one is Fred's. Like instantly, no asking required.
Yep. Because Kevin's desk is a shit show and Fred's desk is perfect.
For the record, it's an organized shit show. I know where things are in the mess, and it's a fucking mess. No doubt about it.
How long you guys been together?
Fred and I started officially working together February of 2008. So is that 14, just over 14, about 14 and a half years ago. So just after, I hadn't even been licensed for a year at that point.
Dude, have you guys been obviously, I know you're always real, but have you guys ever really gotten into it?
No.
Like, ever even once?
Not even once. No, not even once. That's unreal. Have we probably done something that annoyed the other person? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But we've also always been the type who, like, we've always just been the type of people, like, fuck, I'm just going to leave him alone right now. Or I don't actually care about it. That, like, you know, if it was like a business thing, it's like, I actually don't care that much about it. I'm just going to fucking let him run with it. And if he runs into a wall, then we'll just fix it. And if it works, then great for everyone. So literally, no, we've never, like, literally, which sounds weird to even say, but yeah, 14 and a half years and never won, like, scream or yell or like,
what do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I hate to say this, 'cause like this in itself, I think has a lot of ego attached to it, but there's just not a lot of ego. Like we're both way more attached to fucking making it work than we are to being right. And we are two guys that I think I can say this very fairly and honestly, we both like to be right a lot. It's probably both of our challenges. It's certainly one of my challenges. But for whatever reason, we decided early on, right for us was like a business worth having. It was like a business worth owning. It was getting somewhere that we wanted to go. And I think that's always been and has remained our North Star. I know that's a big factor.
Yeah. So two people have a strong desire to be right about a lot. Do you both hold each other to a high level of respect?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's no doubt about that. I'm sure if there was like a therapist here or someone, they would be like, oh yeah, that's the factor, or, you know, or maybe it's how intertwined our families and lives are, you know, but it wasn't like that's the beginning outside of the fact, you know, I would just say like my hunch is like there's just a lot in there. I think we're both way more attached to, I mean, even to put it bluntly, I'm more attached to my bank account than I am to being right. Like, yeah. I want my life to be bigger more than I want to fucking be right about whatever I might be arguing with somebody about.
How much do you think pride costs people financially?
Uncalculable, incalculable. Yeah. I can't even think of the correct English word for it.
Yeah. It's like, what is pride costing you? And if you could somehow find a way to like calculate that into dollars, it would probably be pretty crazy.
Oh yeah. Think about like, it's easy to look at in sports. And I think, probably aging myself here, but anybody who's 40-ish and up would know this, especially if you like sports, but like the Dallas Cowboys, who at one time had the current best coach in the league. They were the best team. Like they were on a run. And because Jerry Jones has to be right, him and Jimmy Johnson couldn't get along and they had to end it. And like the Cowboys had to go back to mediocrity over someone's willingness, or like someone's more attached to being right than they were to winning. Right. And winning. So when I said bank account, you could just say winning. Like, I want championships, things like that.
Yeah. do you think, was this like a conscious thing that you guys had together, like as a partnership? And I know you get this fucking a lot, but I see so many like dissolutions of partnerships and so many things not working out and so much. Were you consciously not prideful, consciously respectful? Is this all conscious or was this like God doing work?
No, we were consciously trying to like not go bankrupt. You know, that's what we were doing. Like, you're like, when you go back to where we started, dude, we were both like, fuck. I like to say we didn't have our backs to the corner. We kind of had our backs to each other, and we're both fighting off creditors and bills and life, you know, all that comes with years of stupid decisions in your 20s. And so when we started working together, we were just both so committed to getting out of a hole and, you know, financially and business wise and getting ourselves some breathing room, that by the time we did that, we looked up and we had a business and we kind of had something going.
Yeah. Did you, as a kid, like growing up, did you always want to win? Like, was that like in you? Did you always want to be rich? Did you always want to have money?
100%. Always. And I don't know if that's just because I grew up poor. And so it's like, you know, so like, that's the cliche thing, but like, I used to even joke about it. I used to tell my mom, like, and I, by the way, I fucking hate golf. I know you love it, bro, and I'm happy for you. I fucking hate that game. I used to tell my mom when I was a kid, I'm like, and this is so not PC anymore. I'm gonna say it anyways. And if you judge me for it, fuck you. But I used to tell my mom, like, I'm white. I think I'm Republican. I didn't even know what it was then. And I'm going to be rich. I have to learn how to play golf. Like I used to say, and then it turned out like golf is stupid. I so hate that game. So frustrating. Anyways. So yes, like I was determined from the get-go to how I just wanted a bigger life. Like I wanted more than what I had experienced to that point.
Yeah. Like when you say poor, like, what do you mean by poor?
So, most of my upbringing, my mom was single. She was married to my dad and then, had a stepdad as well. She had a second marriage for a while. So mostly single family. I'm not sure that my mom ever made more than $40,000 in a year. And so raising two hungry, growing boys, like $35,000-$40,000 annually pre-tax doesn't really go that far. So when I think of, like, if you said, tell me how poor you were, I go back to like little kid, Kevin, I think of like, fuck, I don't get new school clothes this year. Or I only got like one pair of shorts and one t-shirt, but not shoes, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, that's what I think of. Like, we always had a roof over our head, clearly always had food, but we didn't have a whole lot extra. We didn't have vacations. We just didn't have a whole lot extra. Mm-hmm. And so I always wanted the extra, man. Like, you,
where,
like,
did you, you know what, me. So what example? Yeah, I know you now, but like then, like, what example did you have of extra?
I didn't have anything of extra. Like, there was nothing. All I had was a desire for more. Like, I didn't have, that's what I'm saying, is we had no extra. There was nothing left over at the end of the month. I remember one time, I grew up in Yuma and we're up here. You guys, for those of you who are Phoenix natives, you might remember the Price Club long before Costco. And so like once a year, my mom and stepdad would come up here and then go to Price Club, and somebody they knew had a membership or whatever. And they had this skateboard there. Like, for whatever reason, my brother and I were on this trip and they had a skateboard at Price Club. And I wanted the skateboard so bad, bro. And it was like $100 or something. And I was like, I was full blown skater kid at that point in my life. And I remember I wanted it so bad. And I could tell that my mom wanted to buy it for me. And just literally, like, if we bought that skateboard, that meant there was like $100 less worth of food or electricity for the month, yeah, or whatever. And yeah, so she said no, like for a damn skateboard I'd earned it, whatever. Like, I was a good kid. I was paying attention. I was doing my thing. I could tell she wanted it, that she also wanted me to have it, but we couldn't do it. Yeah. So like that's a moment I think of, like, in, you know, even something small like that, like, I just decided earlier on, I'm like, I'm not living like that. Like, I can't have that. I'll find a way around it.
Yeah. I was going to say, when did it start to manifest into like actual different behavior in you?
I mean, I think it already had, like, by that point, like, dude, I was already going to baseball card shows and wheeling and dealing with baseball cards, selling shit. Like, I would just like find, like, if I could find a way to buy something and then sell it for more, or, you know, make trades for baseball cards that then go sell this more expensive cards, things like that, I would always do that. And so I got a job the minute I turned 16. So like from the get go, I was always looking for a way. And then I had to try a lot of stuff and do things. And then prior to real estate, I don't know what it was, but I found a way to get paid more than my education would command. I remember the first time my salary went over $40,000 a year annually. And then when it hit 50 and like 60, and it's like, I had friends with like master's degrees, and granted, this was, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. So the pay scales weren't, you know, where they are today. And I was like, dude, I got friends with master's degrees and they have a lot of school debt, like, that don't even make 3/4 of what I make right now. And so I would always find a way to like maximize whatever I could But I mean, truthfully, it wasn't until I got into real estate and actually started a business that I figured out how to start to make money.
Yeah. How did you, how were you making like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year? What were you doing?
Oh, dude. So when I first moved to Phoenix, I got a job at a call center for Bank One. At the time it was Bank One, and it was doing credit card collections, like early front end collections. It was basically customer service. I think it's where I really learned to sell. And then I worked my way into this like support position in the company through like this program they had. So then I worked for the team that like ran the auto dialers for the whole call center, and then for other call centers. And then I just parlayed that into one job after another. Like I literally, and then like I networked and parlayed that role into just another pay raise, another job, a different role. And then it wasn't, I remember I actually turned, I was worked for GE had acquired the company I was working for. And at the time GE still had all the shine on it. You know, it was still like the, you know, like the company in the United States, or not even just the United States, the world. And I had turned down an offer for a decent sized promotion because I had already gone back to school. And I was like, cause I'd figured out like, I probably can't work for someone else. I'm not really capable of following rules that don't matter and things like that. And so I turned it down. I remember I pissed off a lot of people by that, but by that time I was like, I just know that I can't work for someone else, no matter how much they paid me. Even if my salary, you know, at that time, if you'd offered me $100,000 a year, I probably would have really considered it, but I probably would have said no.
Yeah. Is that an authority thing?
It's probably go back to that need to be right that I mentioned earlier. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I just don't want to follow your rules if your rules don't make sense. Like, yeah. You know, Fred used to say there was this guy that he used to listen to that he would say the definition of religion is man-made rules that lack purpose. Mm-hmm. And that just resonated with me. Like I don't do well with rules that I don't see the value in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's a certain way I have to behave and act, if I have to say certain things to make people feel a certain way rather than like actually execute on something, like I'm out. Like I'm just, yeah. I'm out. Can't do it.
Yeah. How much do you think the cold calling? Because when I first went into my second job, when I moved to Phoenix, when I was 18, I was cold calling. I was hammering, you know, 800 calls a day. And I always say it's like, it was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. How much was the cold calling? You said you learned to sell. How much of that like was transcended you into real estate, and how beneficial was that for you?
So, you know, what's funny is I have cold called for real estate, but not a lot, but in doing the collections for Bank One and then kind of building a little bit of a career prior to real estate in the call center world, banking call center world, credit world. What that really did is that actually set me up for short sales, which is obviously how you and I first connected, right? Because I understood what happened is when I got into real estate, then my third transaction ever was a short sale. And then Fred and I partner up a few months later, like officially, and all we're doing is short sales. I understood who I was calling. So like when I called the 800 number at Bank of America or GMAC or Wells Fargo or whatever, I literally knew the person I was calling in some cases, like actually physically knew the person on a first name basis outside of work in some cases. But more importantly, I understood the mindset of the person I was talking to. And so when they said stuff that didn't matter, like it never really bothered. I mean, okay, it bothered me. I yelled at some people. I might've lost my temper once or twice. But the point is like, I already knew the game. I had a cheat code because I knew what they were thinking. I knew what they were doing, and it allowed me to beat them.
Well, I was going to say, when you said I never knew you worked for Bank One. I was like, dude, you fucking worked for the enemy.
I did. Oh, I used to say like I worked for the devil prior to real estate. And then I decided to start helping people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the devil, in case you're wondering who I'm referring to, Chase. Devil. Sure. Jamie Dimon, well, terrible person.
Yeah, because in the short sale days, I mean they were the devil. That's so funny. How is your how do you sniff out a rule that doesn't make sense? Like how is that worked out in your, like, how is that in your life? Do you use that in business? Do you use that in your life? Do you use that in your personal life? Like, how do you sniff out a rule where you're like, this is bullshit. Is that intuition? Is it principle? What is it?
No, I think it's intuition. Here's the deal with principles. And I probably don't use the word the way you use the word. Cause you always force me to think when you use that word. When I hear principle, for most people, I hear this dumb set of rules that they have that they don't actually think about. And so I think it's intuitive. Sorry, I'm about to offend at least half the people on this call, but like wearing masks for the last 2 years, there's no scientific fact for it. It's like, well, hold on a second. That doesn't actually make sense. Literally does not make sense. So maybe no. So like, I'm just the guy that like for the last 2 years, when I walked through the airport, like I, or anywhere else that required masks, if I chose to go there or had to go there, like not really had to, I guess you always have a choice. Like I just didn't put it on until someone called me out for it. And then even at the airport, it's like only to get through security and then only to get on the airplane. And then only while I was on the airplane. Right. Because like your rule doesn't make sense. Like there's no logic behind it. And so I'm not going to follow it. Or another example that won't offend as many people is I used to never forget the scenario. I sent an email one time. And for those of you who've known me for a while, you know that I forgot that I can't work for somebody. And for like 6 months, I was a regional director for Keller Williams Realty for a franchise region. And I sent an email one day I replied all. I didn't even initiate the email. However, but on that email was Gary Keller, Mo Anderson, Mark Willis, I don't know, Mary Tennant, a few other people, the executives, right? And then like three or four of us. And I got in trouble for not putting people in the right in the right order. Cause I didn't list Gary first and Mo second and Mark third and then Mary. I literally got reprimanded and I went, okay, exactly, Dave. I went, what the fuck? Literally. And I'm like, okay, I can't play. I'm out, you know? And so it's natural. Like something just like doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive. And I don't know if I'm actively listening for that stuff, or I'm just not actively blocking that stuff out. But when I see something or hear something and I don't love the way it feels, like I take note of it. And depending on who you are or the scenario, like I have more grace to ask why. And in other scenarios, I don't. And I'm like, fuck you. Like I'm not doing that. Literally, like I'm literally just not doing that.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's just I think it's a lot more instinctual than it is anything else.
It's one of the, and I don't know, you'll tell me now, but for how different you and Fred are, like for how different of, you know, we'll go back to the desks, how meticulous, how on purpose he is and how, you know, methodical he is with things and how you're I'll figure it out type. You do both share that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I saw a friend yesterday. For those of you who may know of Streamline Business Solutions, they're our bookkeepers, but prior to that company starting, David Patiglio, the founder, and his wife, Christy Patiglio, we knew them separately. In fact, before they even knew each other. And Christy used to work with another agent that Fred and I knew. And she at one time described Fred and I as, she's like, you know, you guys are definitely similar, but different. She goes, it's like you guys are in different corners of the same brain. Cause you don't think the same, you don't actually always show up the same, but you do arrive to usually the same conclusion.
Well, I was going to say what blew me away when getting to know Fred early on was his ability to throw the middle finger up too. And I was like, oh, goddamn, Fred. Yeah.
He's more so than anyone. So Fred, like, this is what we joke about. Like, I have less of a filter, as you've notated by the how many times I've said fuck already 28 minutes in. And so I have less of a filter. Fred is a lot judgier. He just doesn't always say it out loud. And I say that kind of lightheartedly, but I mean, that even shows up on behavioral profiles.
Well, yeah. When Fred's like, I fucking love you, Dust. I was like, I did it. I fucking did it. Yeah. And by the way, Gene, if you're on here, let's edit that mask and that mask comment into like a 20-second clip, and we'll make sure to get out that to the ethos.
We'll make sure Spotify puts the COVID-19 blue thing above it. Yes, absolutely.
There's Gene. That's funny. So, what has, we talked about this a little bit, but what's something in like the past 6 months you've really been like working on or pondering on or changed your mind about, or I've noticed a little shift, in you. What's that?
Everything.
Everything. Okay. Well, dude, like what's everything?
I mean, so how can I answer this question? I don't know. It was so coming into the beginning of the year, things were going really good. Still are going really good. I mean, they're great. In fact, it's almost weird. You and I have talked about this many times. Like, I'm always like a little leery. I don't let it slow me down, but like when things are really good, I'm like looking for the right hook, right? I'm looking for it. And so, you know, things have just been going really good. I was starting to feel this already, but then in end of February, I lost my grandfather, who I was very close with, very like shock, surprise. Like so surprising the night before, literally the night before he died. We were talking about how he'll probably be alive for another 15 years, if not more. And then just, you know, so that was kind of like, oh God, you know, what's happening. And then I had an uncle die like 2 weeks later. So I don't know if it's a combination of like that, cause it'd been a while since I'd lost anybody close. And I had a lot of losses earlier in my life, like when I like late teens and early 20s, of friends and family members. And so it'd been a while since like any kind of substantial loss. And so I don't know if it was that was like a jolt or what, but I found myself in March and April just going, I'm kind of bored and I'm not sure what to do about it. Like I have some things I set out for, and that's great. And I love it. And also I'm not real sure what to do now. I'm not sure what to do with myself now and what I should be doing next. I just felt a little lost, I guess. And so that forced me to really explore, I think, a lot of things internally.
Lost as a person, lost in business, lost as a father, yes. Lost as a husband, lost or all.
Maybe a little bit of all, but definitely on the business side. Like definitely on the business side. I love
what was your business look like at that time? Because you're with EXP and you like what's your business look like at that time?
When you say look like, do you mean like what are my activities or like what's the like, income? What's the
no what you, like at that time when you were lost, it's like so you have a real estate team, correct?
Boring, just boring. Like here's the deal. The and I when you do something consistently for a long period of time, and you're commit, especially if you're committed to doing it certain ways, like I hate to use this word, but like there's some autopilot features to my business, for me anyways. And those all sound great and they are, and it's not all great. Like not everything's all good. Right. Everything it's like, there's this balance to it. And so my business look like it doesn't actually require that much of me every week. And so business wise, I was feeling a little bit of like, well, where do I go, put more effort into, you know, what's going to be the biggest return, what's, financially. And then also like for me as a person and for the other people. And then like, well, maybe I should be doing these other things over here. So there was just like a lot of searching that happened. You know, for the first, you know, half of this year. And, I ended up taking a lot of time off.
Was it like almost like so much leverage that was the lost? Like, were you lacking purpose? Were you lacking like, you know what I mean by that?
I don't know if it was purpose. It was definitely lacking excitement.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that you have to have excitement, although I like it. You know, and I think also part of it is like, so there's like some, from like a financial standpoint, I surpassed whatever goals I had ever dreamed of as a kid a long time ago. And then also from like a business practicality standpoint, like I literally, like Dustin, if I showed you this, I did this exercise, with someone that worked for Frank Klusitz. Frank owns Viral Marketing, and he was helping me with our Facebook group, Next Level Agents. And one of the things that we were going to do just to kind of build the community was offer these kind of goal setting calls. And that's a bad word. We didn't even use the word goal setting. It had more to do with like, what do you want out of life? And, you know, what are you drawn to, characteristics, things like that. So he's like, you should probably do one yourself before you like go offer this to 25,000 people. So I was like, yeah, that's really good advice. And so I did. And so I remember I wrote it all down, or I said all the things. Peter, his name is Peter McDonald. He asked me all these questions. He wrote it all down. And Crystal just asked a really good question. And yeah, we should go there in a minute. So he asked me these questions. I answered him, and he sends me this Google Doc, shares it with me. That was in February of 2020. So yeah. So just think about like where the world was, and then think about like the next month. Like I forgot about that. Like the world fell apart theoretically. Like, you know, we all thought it was going to end March of 2020. Then the mask saved us. And so, that was a joke for those of you keeping score at home. And so what happens is like, I then later on, like I reflect on it earlier this year. I actually had forgotten about that till late last year. And then earlier this year, I'm reflecting on it and I'm reading this part of it. It's this 5-year vision. And I was like, fucking living that to 100% to a T already. And I texted Fred. I was like, dude, I know my problem is I got exactly what I asked for 2 years ago. And now I'm fucking bored with it. But it's literally verbatim what I asked for. And so that really forced me to think like, well, what am I asking for? You know, what am I asking for out of life, out of my, you know, business, relationships, all of it. Right. And so I don't know. I think maybe I've just gone more introspective a lot. I know you said in the last 6 months, but I think also probably in the last 2 years that, you know, I spent a lot more time thinking than ever before. And sometimes mm-hmm. thinking about things that are really practical and sometimes not so much.
Do you still I don't feel even know lost?
I answered your question.
I've just noticed like, just like, I guess that would be it. I've just noticed you're just cause we're close friends. Like you've looked at things that maybe you haven't looked at before, or you're going into different parts that you maybe have not even not looked at, but just maybe even didn't even know they were there. And yeah. So you said you were lost. Go through that process. Like, have you found yourself again? And, or like for people like on for people, like, I think this is something that a lot of people talk to me about it because I coach with people, but I think there's a lot of people that feel lonely in this space of like feeling lost. What did you do? Like, what were some of the things you did to kind of find yourself again?
I think I kept asking questions, which is what I do now. Like, I think that's my natural behavior is I'm inquisitive. It's why I have a podcast. I just literally like to ask people questions and learn. And so a couple of years ago, I realized I had to ask myself more questions and then like fucking sit and wait on the answer. And so, so I started doing that. I think also too, you know, really recently, like since the end of June, Curtis Johnson shared that book with me, Diet with Zero. And I think maybe part of the reason why it's been so impactful for me is like the timing of it and the things I've dealt with. And so I do feel like I've quote unquote found myself, especially if we're talking about like 6 months ago versus today. I do feel that way. I feel clear, not just clear on where I'm going and what I want, but what I do sort of daily. And then more importantly, like what I want out of the, you know, the last 46 years of my life.
What were some of the most powerful questions you were asking of yourself?
What do I want and why? Like, first of all, and like, not just like, what do I want? So you and I have both been in a culture of like, where the definition of wealth is doing what you want, when you want, with who you want, for however long you want. And that's a bullshit answer. I get it, but that's bullshit. It's surface level because no, like, okay, so if you can actually do what you want, when you want, with who you want, like who is it? What, like, what exactly is it that you're doing? Like, and so I had to ask myself the question of like, well, what is it that I want to do and who do I want to do it with and for how long? And all, like all of those things, like just trying to go down another notch as opposed to just like the surface level answers of like, hey, if I, you know, like when I accomplish this, I'm going to have that. Like I had to start asking myself more questions. And I think too, having kids helped made it easier for me to like really think of like, well, what are the things I want them to think about when they're 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years old too, based on what I'm doing right now. And so just literally kind of digging into some of those details.
Yeah.
And does that answer your question?
No. Yeah. Yeah. I guess. So the question thing's so powerful. I love that. And one of the powerful things, and I don't know if anyone on the call heard it, that is fucking like amazing, is that. And what we have to do, and what I have to do is once we ask a really, really hard question, just because we don't get an immediate answer doesn't mean that we should ask a lower level question. It's like you said something, you're like, I'd ask a hard question and I'd sit on it for a while.
Yeah. And I'm impatient. My leading behavior trait is impatience. And so that's been a struggle for me. So like, I literally had to like learn to go, well, no, this is an important question. So I'm going to fucking sit with it. If it takes me 6 months to answer it, I'm going to sit with it and keep asking myself this question.
Yeah. And then did you ever, what I find with me, if I have a really hard question, then I'll start to ask some of my close people around me, you know, those questions, just to get different insights of different.
All the time. 100%. Like I do that constantly.
Yeah. So what's the biggest thing you've changed your mind on?
I changed my mind on recently. You know, I think that the biggest thing I've changed my, I'm trying to think if this is, I don't know if this is going to be I don't know if I would accept this answer if I was asking the question. So if it doesn't satisfy you, challenge me on it. I think the biggest thing I've changed my mind on recently is I've had this desire. I felt like there was no net worth goal. It was as much as possible. It was absolute. So like, it wasn't like, oh, I want to be worth $10 million. I want to be worth $25 million or whatever. And now there's a goal. And it's a lot lower than I thought it would be, because the goals have gotten way more. Like the goals are spending money on experiences and living a certain way. And so that's something I've changed on. I think part of it is too, like going back to this earlier part of our conversation where I grew up with really nothing extra, no money, kind of lower middle class. And then I got to a point in my life where I'm like finally started making money. And then I'm really good at spending money. I'm like really good at spending money. And then I got to the point of like, well, that's stupid. Like I really got to make sure that I'm making good decisions here. And so then I got into this mental frame of like, I have to accumulate as much money and assets as possible. And so then I started changing my behavior for that. And there's a lot of good in that. And then I realized like, as I read that book, Die with Zero, it forced me to actually go in and do some calculations and come up with some hard numbers and realize like, well, actually like, and this is not like I'm not giving myself a license to spend like a drunken sailor, but it forced me to go, well, actually, if you just do X, Y, Z, which you're already well on the path to, you're already there. Like you're there. You can do that in this period of time. And you can then go, and if you force yourself to come up with these other things that you want out of life, you can go experience those. And so I've changed my mind on net worth. I think to boil it down, I would say if you asked me financially what I was optimizing for up until June, it was net worth. And what I've decided I'm going to optimize for is net fulfillment, to steal the term from Bill Perkins. Decided to optimize for net fulfillment.
What fulfills you?
They're different things. Oh, so like that's part of, so that is part of the, that's like part of the book and part of the exercises that I've gone through is like, thinking about experiences with kids, spouse, friends, coworkers, things like that. And literally like, attempting to time bucket them as well as it's like, I don't know exactly what's going to fulfill me the most, but I'm going to give it a try. And like right now that looks like, so I played it. You might be aware of this game. I played a sport growing up called Over the Line or OTL. And, but you know, I never played in the World Championships, which is in San Diego every summer while I'm there. And I was like, it just dawned on me this July. I was like walked in the coffee shop with my oldest daughter, Sophie. And we were talking and she's like, what is that? I told her, I was like, I need to play in that. So it's like just going and doing that. So think of a bucket list, but a bucket list is not, it's not the right word because a bucket list is like, I'm going to check these things off before I die, which could be in a year or two. And granted, we could all die tomorrow. So I'm aware of that, but it's about making sure I'm having these experiences, right? Like I know that in 10 years, over the next 10 years, like my daughter's going to, both of them are going to start driving. My oldest daughter will have graduated high school already. So like, what are the experiences I want to have with her or them, both of them before they're out of the house and before they're through high school and before they're both double digits or teenagers, like all, just literally bucketing it down to things like that. Everything from like family vacations to like the selfish thing I talked about of like playing OTL or having been snowboarding since Sophie was one. So almost nine years. Just doing things like making sure I'm doing things like that. And those can all change. So it's going to be like a constant evolving exercise.
Yeah. You know, and I see this a lot in people that I work with and just a lot in general, like people from like 30 to 50 years old, for whatever reason, seem to struggle with fun so much. Like why do you think that is?
You taught me that.
Yeah. But why do you think that is?
I know for myself, I think that we get caught up in what we have to do. We have commitments. We have a business or a job and we have a spouse and kids and people that depend on us or whatever. And then we have, which then puts us into these roles, right? They put us into these roles of like, this is who I am. And like, I actually think the worst thing, so funny because like the word identity is for whatever reason, like a trap word these days. But like, I think the worst thing, one of the biggest problems we have in the world is we all have this fucking need to identify as something. And I say that as a guy who's identifying as a Dodger fan right now. And I'm not letting that go, but we all have this need to identify as a Republican or as a Democrat or as a realtor or Keller Williams realtor or an EXP realtor. Like, and I think that we get these identities and the less time we spend thinking about why we have that identity and why we're doing that, then the more stuck we get into those roles. And that I think as you grow up, like you just, the roles of fun, like just, we don't think it's important. We're taught, I think from a very early age that fun isn't important as you grow up. And the truth is it is important.
I've never met somebody truthfully, if you got like in their heart and asked them, like, do you like to have fun? I've never seen anyone say no, I don't enjoy fun. But it's so funny because I look at it this way. It's like the more you prioritize yourself and your own things that fulfill you, like Over the Line championship, going to San Diego, going to the Dodger game downtown, the more of these things that fulfill you, I feel like then your kids get to an experience a more fulfilled dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And
100%.
And your wife gets to experience a more fulfilled husband. And yep. So by prioritizing yourself, like the byproduct of that is like, you're a better you for everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 100%. And I think it's easy. I think it's easy to go, yeah, but then you're just selfish and you only care about you. And that requires no thought. Like that lacks nuance, which is easy and lazy. to not think about how important that is. Like, if you can't think about threading the needle between the two realities of, like, we all know it, especially you and I, we grew up in small towns. So, like, we know the guys that really aren't really doing a whole lot more different than they were when we were 16 drinking beers in the front yard or in the desert. And they're still doing it now in their 40s, and that's their life and, you know, responsibility, but they have a lot of fun. We like to not realize that there's a nuance between that person and the person who's go, go, go all the time and always in the role of husband, dad, mom, wife, daughter, you know, whatever, employee, employer, and serious all the time. Like, if you, to not think about the nuance is just fucking lazy. Like, it's literally mentally lazy. And it's so important to having a fulfilled life. I think
I'm stealing fucking 100% of all that.
Yeah, take it. I'm like, sure I did not make it up. No, I'm sure I didn't make it up. I repeated what someone else said at some point that I listened to.
Well, it's so good. It's like certain things, like, I say it on this call all the time. It's like, life isn't this or that. This or that requires no fucking thought. It requires no thinking. And I love the term of threading the needle. That's really good. And that's really finding the integration of these things in life. And I think that's really where fulfillment lives in the integration of these things.
Yeah, dude, it really, yes. Yeah. 100%. There's literally no doubt in my mind left about that.
Yeah. Do you feel like, do you feel like you're prioritizing yourself more, less, or the same?
As opposed to what, like 6 months ago?
Whenever you were lost. Yeah.
Oh, in a way less, in the micro less, because I think I worked like 4 days between the months of June and July. Mm-hmm. I just, by design, did that. Like, I decided a couple years ago, like, if my kids are not in school, I just don't want to be at work. So that's like the goal. That's microcosm of like, yeah, like I just didn't have a lot. So now I'm in a way, like I'm a lot more clear on what I'm doing work-wise, which is a little bit less time for me theoretically, but I am being more purposeful with my time for me, if that makes sense. So yeah, totally. It's a little bit of both.
Yeah. I didn't want to miss this, and I tagged this because I know you wanted to answer this, is Crystal's question that she had earlier on here, where she said, does anger fuel you to have a chip on the shoulder to get motivated?
Yeah, it always has my whole life. Like, love being the underdog. I love being the guy that when I first got my real estate license, the guy that owned the brokerage that I joined, I met him like first day, and he looked at me and he did this. I was wearing shorts, by the way, that day, and flip-flops and a t-shirt. And I could just tell, I was like, this motherfucker thinks I'm not going to sell any real estate at all. And it annoyed the shit out of me. And that's great for me. Like, I can get up and go with that. And a good friend of mine who you know, Michael Burnoff, I had, and David Queen, he was there with us in the room that he probably doesn't remember because he said it to me. But David was in the room. There's like five of us in a room one day with Michael, and Michael was teaching us about something. And he said something to me to the effect of, and this was September of 2020, something to the effect of, yeah, that's great. Like, you guys do great with the chip. He's referring to me and Fred, like, you guys do great with the chip on your shoulder. Like, you get mad, and then really it's worked well for you. Like, it's worked really well for you, but like, maybe there's just a smarter way to do it now. And ever since that day, he was like, maybe you don't need to be mad about this anymore. Like, maybe there's just a smarter way. And I was like, fuck. And so what is, I think, maybe the heart of like Crystal's question, whether it's her and I have to probably talk about this offline. If not, I know I share it with some people, is like, so I spent all the way up until literally that day really being good about being motivated by a chip on my shoulder. Go ahead, count me out. That's good. I love it. Underestimate me. I'm cool with that. I'm good. Maybe I'm not going to worry about that anymore. And then I got to the point of like, I stopped caring about a lot of things that I used to care about because it would motivate me and maybe even agitate me and get me going. And then I was like, oh shit, now I don't know what's going to get me going. Cause I'm really not mad about much anymore. Like, I'm not, I don't give a shit even more than I did before, and including the things that I used to let agitate me in a good way. So I think that would be the root of my problem earlier this year. I had nothing to be mad about.
Yeah. Well, were you really mad? So like, I will never, like, I don't ever have the desire to get rid of the chip on my shoulder, but it's the competitive spirit of wanting to win. It's like, does that make sense? Like if we play pool against each other, like, I want to beat you and I love you. Like, I'm not mad.
Because pool's dumb, just like golf. Yeah, so yeah, well, okay, you're gonna
over the line then. Okay. Fuck.
Yeah. So it's so funny. Like, so Jeff just said, you're turning to Gary. Fuck you, Jeff. But like, I used to let there, like, Gary Geller did something that was very personal and mean and attacked my family's ability. Like it's harsh. And it was real easy for me to use that for fuel for a couple of years, like real easy. And I just don't give a fuck. Like, I just don't, I'm like, what a moron. I can't believe he did that. I can't believe he'd even put himself in that position, but good for him. Right. And so that's a great example of something. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. I'm just not mad about it. You know, I don't need that to get me motivated recruit or to prove that I can still sell real estate or whatever. Like, and that's just an example. There's plenty. Like, I've let people, like, there's always a villain, right? I've always had a villain, right, at some point in my life. And so that I just decided to stop having them.
Yeah. I think it's how you define the chip on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, like, I just like winning and I love that about me, you know, like, it's that, I guess that's the chip, you know, I mean, if that's the chip, then that's chip. And then you said villain, where actually, I don't want to bring the guy up, but like, there's one you told me, you're like, somebody always like needs a fight, you know? Yeah, like, I don't necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good and bad. Like, if you don't learn how to channel that, like, and I'm still competitive. Like, if we go play pool, like, I'm not playing pool because now I know, you know how, so I'm not going to do that until I practice. I want to win. I do want, I'm competitive. I usually won't put myself in a position to play a game against someone or something if I don't think I have a chance to win. And so I, like, that part is still there. Like, there's that competitive part. I just don't have to be mad about it. I don't have to be mad that this guy who's like a famous pool player snubbed me and said, I don't know what I'm doing when I shoot, you know what I mean? Like, that just,
I
decided to not let that be the thing. Yeah. Well, that's where I was. Like, that's where I think that's where I grew up a lot of. Like, I was like, well, I'm gonna make it anyways. Cool. You don't like it, I'm gonna make it anyways. You don't like that I wear flip flops, I'm gonna make it anyways. You don't like it that I wear shorts, I'm gonna make it anyways. All of those types of things.
Kate, can we mute? David, will you mute everyone that's not Kevin and I? So you stop trying to, like, what, I guess, like, prove yourself or like prove it to people, or.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything to prove. And I probably never did, but I felt like I did, or I used feeling that way as a way to motivate myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. And now that's just not how I motivate myself.
How do you motivate yourself now?
Net fulfillment. I'm a lot more clear on what I want out of life. And I'm really clear the fact that I've, you know, I think I got 46 years left.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. I look at that as like where you said it made you angry. Like, I look at it as like fun.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like when I saw you, like, you know, like, okay, just let's see the flip flops and being successful with shorts on. It's like, I don't look at that as like a fuck that guy. I look at it like, oh, this will be fun. Like, this is fun. This is exciting. Right. Like,
yeah. And so, like, and you would play into that. Like, you, like, that is the way you would show up. And I guess rather than you go, yeah, you know what? Now Dustin is like, oh, this is cool. And he, like, maybe I made him realize there's one less rule in life he has to follow.
Totally.
One less dumb society standard that he has to follow. Instead of looking at that, what I would do is I would look at the other person who was like, you can't fucking put this guy on stage. You can't let him, like, he shouldn't be teaching. He shouldn't be, he's not the expert. He can't even, you know? So I would focus on the guy that was like the doubter judging me based on whatever clothing or shoe footwear, as opposed to me going, yeah, but like, I just let, like, I just gave Dustin one less thing to fucking worry about in life.
Totally. Like, I loved the beating to your own drum. Like, it was just like, it's why I left my old company, is because I had to beat to their drum. And then I have you as an example of somebody who's just beaten to their own drum, or our buddy, you know, Chet Black beaten to his own drum, or like, I just like the guys that just, and gals that just,
that guy's
like,
drum is a trumpet, by the way. Like, that's how weird he is. I love him for it, by the way.
Yeah. But like, I just love that unapologetically. And it, okay, here's what I'll say, Kev, is like, unapologetically myself without being bitter.
Yeah.
And I think when we're angry and when we're like pissed off or whatever, there's this bitterness to the, I'm me, motherfucker. Right. It's like, this is who I am. It's like, haha, I'm going to prove you wrong. And then there's the like, no, I'm just going to be me. And I'm going to show you that I can do it with flip-flops on or shorts on. I'm going to show you do it. I can do it my way. And it's just like, it's like, it's just not bitter. I don't have any bitterness attached to it.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, I think that's a great way of putting it.
When people first start setting boundaries in their life, they learn boundaries. They start, I always see them set bitter boundaries.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can set boundaries without being bitter. Like,
yes. Those are the boundaries. Easy ones to set. Those are the easy ones to set. And maybe those are like, those are good starters. Like, that's like a training wheel. But then we got to, like, I took too long to take off my training wheels. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, no, what do you mean?
I mean, like, I would use bitter boundaries.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and then like, that's cool, because like, setting a boundary is good and healthy, and especially like, especially in real estate, for those of you that claim to work 24/7, fucking stop that. Set a boundary around your work hours. And then, so in, you know, a bitter boundary is better than no boundary at all, is what I mean by that. And so then like, so think of like the bitter boundary example you just gave as like, to me, that's a training wheel. Cool. Mm-hmm. That's better than no boundary at all. And then I'll move to maybe a more healthy boundary.
Yeah. I feel like there's three steps to boundaries. There's bitter boundaries. Then there's just boundaries where you're just conscious of your boundaries and you have no bitterness attached to them. And then there's just fucking, the third version is just living.
Yeah.
Like, I just live. Like, I'm, you know, it's like, I know what I like, know what I don't like. I'm just observant of the things, and I'm just living in it, and I'm going towards what I wrote down here with you is like net fulfillment. Like,
yeah.
That's cool, man. It's been cool to, it's been so cool to watch you be so introspective and like, so, you're just an all in dude. And so you are, dude. And it's so awesome, because like, when you get fixated on something, it's like, you will not stop until it's like, I figure this fucking thing out. Have you always been that way?
Yeah. My buddy, Patrick Woods posted this meme a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh yeah. And it was like, I'm either like completely obsessed or not even a little bit interested. There's no, like, I'm like, yeah. That's definitely me.
That's funny. Growing up, like, is that how you were as a kid? It was were your parents like that? Or who were you more like, your mom or your dad?
Oh, probably more like my dad. I think he might have been, he definitely was like that. Like, but at least with like sports teams, for sure. No, he was like that with everything. You know, now I think about it. I was pretty young when he died. I was like 20, he died when I was 20. 22. At any rate, definitely more like my dad in that sense. But yeah, like, I can't remember not being like that. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. You've said death a lot. How it like in the past, like your dad died when you were, you said 25.
Yeah, it was 2002. So that would have been what, 20 years ago. So then I was It's 24. Sorry, I'm getting bad at math, apparently. Fuck. I do know 3% is.
3% of fucking everything. Everything. How do you deal? How do you handle death?
Oh, I don't know. I just do like anything else that's bad that happens. Like you just, it shows up and like you figure it out. Like there's two things. There's two ways to respond, you know, to things that happen. And it's like one of those ways is like you figure it out, or one of those ways is you don't. Like, and I've just been like, well, I got to wake up tomorrow and I still have to do these things. And so I'm just going to, you know, whatever, dude, I don't know. I had three close friends die, within a year of each other, 1 year, and as a teenager. And then, you know, some close family members, and of course my dad. And, you know, so I don't know, maybe I learned to deal with it earlier on. And I don't know, I don't have a strategy for it. I really don't. But I think maybe I just had a younger realization that like people do die. Mm. And like, it's just like, it's inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your thoughts on death? Like, are you scared of it? Do you think about it often? Are you fearful of it? Like,
I would say a year ago, I was definitely fearful of it compared to where I feel today. And it's probably just more of like, I don't know. Like, I don't think about it a ton outside of like the giant poster I look at every day. I don't know. I just think of it like it's coming for all of us, no matter what. I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about it outside of the using it to motivate myself to stay on track for net fulfillment of like, am I going to go have this experience? Am I going to have the Disneyland experience with my daughters? Am I going to have the, you know, the Hawaii experience with family members or the cruise experience with extended family or the snowboarding experience in Utah, whatever, fill in the blank, right? I'm just like, okay, well, I look at it as more of like, it's like a countdown to make sure I do experience things, you know, before then.
Yeah. What's the poster you look at every day?
It's called, some people refer to it as like Life in Weeks. It's a poster, and it has, in my case, like, so it's got 90 years worth of dots. Each dot represents a week, and each line of dots is 52 weeks. And so just every week you just fill in a dot. Mm. And so as you, if you go look on my Instagram, I don't know if I put it on Facebook or not. I've got like a picture of it where it's like, you know, partially like I just colored in, it's colored in one circle a week.
Yeah. In the die was zero. They basically try to, in the book, they talk to you about, like what you're going to live to, right? Essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, it's a model. It's a framework for thinking about that and using the intersection of money,
author. What's that?
Health. Bill Perkins. Yeah. You know, and it's using the intersection of money, health, stages of life, and to factoring all those things to get, like, here's the deal. I think if I give you guys this example, you'll hear it. Every Warren Buffett is revered in investing circles, right? When you think of investing, I don't think anybody on this call would actually change places with Warren Buffett. What a fucking terrible life. Like, there's no way I'd want that life. He has more money than almost anybody. And drinks a lot of Diet Cokes, has a lot of Big Macs, and we lost the host. And yet I wouldn't change. There's no way I'd change places with that guy. There's no way. He's optimized for net worth. That's awesome. Good for him. I think there's a lot more to life than net worth. Yeah. Dave, maybe he's empty. Maybe he's not, like, but the thing is, I know that what he has is not what I want. That's most important. Like, maybe it is, but like, literally think about that. Like, there is just no way would I want to live in the same house I bought 50 years ago, drinking, a diet, you know, 10 Diet Cokes a day and eating a McDonald's every day, driving the same beater car, whatever. Like, That sounds stupid. What a waste. Like, what a waste of resources. Like, it's like, it makes me think of that Oscar Wilde quote, like, anybody who lives within their means lacks from creativity, or they're just lacking creativity, right? And so, and again, it's this nuance, going back to what I said earlier about like, don't have lazy thoughts, is of this, like, probably live within your means. Like, that's really intelligent, right? Like maybe don't spend more money than you make. And also maybe don't save, invest, whatever, sock away more than you're ever going to possibly be able to spend. Like, how much more good could you get out of it? And more importantly, like, let's say, using Warren, Mr. Buffett as an example, only because it's, you know, he's so outrageous and so on the, you know, he's such an outlier. Like, let's say today he decided, you know what, this is dumb. I've got more money than I can ever spend. I need to go experience more life. So let's say he decides to go on a cruise. And on that cruise, there's going to be stops at all these ports. Do you think that dude's getting off at those ports, and he's like going to go out and explore, like, the caves, or, you know, where? Like, no, he can't. He's physically not able. He's past that stage of life where he's even physically capable of spending money on things and experiences. And to me, that's just, you know, not worth, you know, not worth it. Not worth it at all.
Did you enjoy today's podcast? Join the Kevin and Fred community, part of eXp Realty, and partner with us today. You'll get free access to live trainings 2 or more times a month, live events and in-person masterminds, digital downloads to help you run and scale your business, and much, much more. To learn more and join our community, visit kevinandfred.com/contact and contact us today. Not ready to join our community? No problem. Continue enjoying all this great content on our podcast for free.